Thank you, Simon and Judith. And could we have the first slide, please, Libby? So hard as it might be, try and forget where you are. Take yourself away from your sofa, away from Westcott, or wherever you happen to be this morning, and let your imagination take you back to Corinth. Corinth in the first century. Imagine being a follower of Jesus, gathering with others in a villa in the city. You're Greek and were brought up to worship the many gods and goddesses at the temples in the city. The believer next to you is a Jewish convert. You come from the poor part of town, and you wouldn't ever have normally come to a house like this. There's quite a mix of people present, rich and poor, slaves and free, men and women. You became a follower of Jesus 5 years ago when you heard Paul preaching in Corinth. And ever since then, you've been meeting for fellowship and worship. Today, you've gathered to hear the first reading of a letter that Paul has sent the church. And listening to the first part of that letter has made you feel uncomfortable. Paul's upset about the infighting, about the lawsuits. Worse, someone's told him about the chap in the church who's had an affair with his stepmother. So it's actually a bit of a relief when you get to the next part of the letter and Paul starts answering some questions you've all sent him. Paul begins to sound less dogmatic, more pragmatic. He tackles questions about marriage, sex, divorce, singlehood. And a question that you've asked about eating meat that's been sacrificed to idols. Can we have slide two, please, Libby? As a Greek convert, this is quite an issue for you. You follow Jesus and you worship the one true God. You've stopped worshipping the idols at the temples. You know they're not real. But all aspects of life in Corinth, business, politics, socializing, shopping, are entwined with the temples. You like eating meat, and most of the meat at the market, especially the decent stuff, has been ritually slaughtered in the temple. Slide three, please, Libby. You worry what people will think when they see you buying it. And when your pagan friends ask you to dinner, one of them goes to great trouble to tell you which meats have been offered in sacrifice so you can avoid them and avoid compromising your faith. Yet Paul seems to be suggesting it's fine to eat the meat. The earth is the Lord's and everything in it, he says. But then he says it's not fine if eating it causes problems for someone. You're getting a bit confused. Though on reflection, you decide you've understood Paul. In theory, you have every right to eat the meat, but if it upsets someone or gives the wrong impression, then better not. That sounds okay to you. So let's leave Corinth and the meat market and return to the present and our sofas. What on earth has this dilemma about eating meat sacrificed to idols that so preoccupied the Corinthians got to do with us? Whether we buy our meat from the butchery or from Lidl, it's not something we have to worry about. But one thing we do have in common with the Corinthians is living in a world where things are not always clear-cut and where boundaries are sometimes blurred, as in the meat market in Corinth. Paul, as we've seen in our study of Corinthians over the past weeks, has clear boundaries on many things, but he also recognises there are grey issues that are more the matter of our individual conscience and circumstance. And what Paul does in this part of the letter that's relevant for us is provide guidelines, principles, about how to approach these issues. And his guidelines don't just have to be applied to moral dilemmas. They're principles for living, living as disciples of Jesus Christ in our church and in our community. So could we have the next slide, please, Libby? The first principle Paul gives us is not to get hung up about our own rights, our own freedoms, but to think about what is best for the other. In Corinth, they had a popular slogan that Paul quotes several times: "I have the right to do anything," or "anything goes," as the Message Bible translates it. That may be true, Paul tells us, but that doesn't mean that everything is beneficial. We shouldn't be seeking our own good, but the good of others. In the past year, we've had many rights and freedoms that we used to take for granted, taken away from us. Currently, many of us are not allowed to visit our parents, our children, or grandchildren. We're forbidden to go on holiday or get married, or to mourn a death by sharing hugs, tears, and laughter with lots of family and friends. And it has been tough. But we know that it's for the good of the other. It's beneficial for our community, our country. But there are some who think their personal rights are more important. Take something like mask wearing. Some are exempt for good reasons, but others say it's against their human rights to have to wear a mask. And Paul would have given them very short shrift. Vaccines are another grey area. People may have all sorts of reasons for declining. But the Queen was very unusually forthright in her views of those who are reluctant to take it up. She said, and she almost might have been quoting Paul, "But they ought to think about other people rather than themselves." Paul continues, "I have the right to do anything, but not everything is constructive." Other translations say not everything builds up. Building each other up, building the Church of Christ here in this place, is more important than our personal rights and preferences. Being here on Zoom this morning, even if you're feeling utterly zoomed out this week, or if the style of worship or music isn't your normal cup of tea, by being here, you are building up the church, building up the people of God. Next slide, please, Libby. The second guideline or principle that Paul gives us is to be sensitive to others and not to be a stumbling block. Now, each of us is a unique and complicated mix of our genes, our upbringing, our cultures, our life experience. And we may not know what sensitivities, vulnerabilities, or even addictions someone we encounter has. But that doesn't mean we just assume they are okay and assume they are like us. Paul says elsewhere in 1 Corinthians, "If what I eat causes my brother or sister to fall into sin, I will never eat meat again." He wasn't suggesting we all become vegetarians, but to be aware of how our actions, however legitimate in themselves, can cause problems for the other. Now, sensitivity to others is not a natural strength for many of us, and learning how to listen well is a skill we all perhaps need to develop. And we also need to be aware of and educate ourselves about those other hidden issues that people may well choose not to disclose, whether it's abuse, addiction, or mental health problems. And ironically, sometimes it's the very positive face we choose to show to the church or to the world that can be a stumbling block for others. If we always give the appearance of being sorted, of being fine, even when that's not the case, we make it harder for others to open up. And sometimes it's only when we're prepared to be open about our own difficulties that others feel able to admit to theirs. Our Archbishop, Justin Welby, said it was only his daughter's openness about her mental health issues that made him acknowledge he was clinically depressed and needed medical help. Sometimes it's our veneers of confidence and certainty that are actually the stumbling blocks that we put in front of other people. Next slide, please, Libby. The third guideline is whatever you do, do it all for the glory of God. That sounds very grand, but what does it mean? John Wesley suggests it's in all the common as well as sacred actions of life. Keep the glory of God in view. Whatever we eat or drink, whatever we are doing, let's be aware of and thankful for the goodness, graciousness, and love of God. When we do that, we are less inclined to be puffed up by our own self-importance or protesting about our rights and freedoms, and so much more aware of the other and of God in the other. Finding heaven in ordinary, as the poet George Herbert puts it. Paul concludes this part of his letter with a challenge. Last slide, please, Libby. I am not seeking my own good, but the good of many, so that they may be saved. Follow my example, as I follow the example of Christ. That feels like a very tall order, a very impossible challenge. But by the way we live our lives, the integrity of what we both say and do is how we lead other people to Christ. But Paul's given us some guidelines in this passage for following Christ's example. And as we continue our Lenten journey this week, perhaps we could challenge ourselves to take some small steps in following these three principles of Paul. Seeking the well-being of others rather than our personal rights. Doing something that builds the life of the church up. Being aware of the impact of our words and actions on others and not causing them to stumble. And doing everything we do for the glory of God. So let's finish with part of a prayer that's attributed to St. Francis. O Divine Master, grant that I may not so much seek to be consoled as to console, to be understood as to understand, to be loved as to love. Amen.